This is the Band School Podcast, where we talk about business, adventure, and mission with your host, Buddy Rathmel.
Welcome to the BAM School Podcast. I'm your host, Buddy Rathmel. I'm excited today to have a conversation with Eric Olson. He's a business entrepreneur and CEO of Dignity Made. He sold a painting business in 2003 to serve the oppressed. And after 10 years of humanitarian work, he teamed up with his father-in-law to stop exploitation of coconut farmers in the Philippines, and they started Dignity Made. Currently, Eric lives in St. Paul, Minnesota, with his wife, two squirrely kids, and a border collie. So, Eric, welcome to the BAM School Podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, so Eric and I first met at the BAM conferences that were going on pre-COVID. In Philadelphia, I think, was the first place that we met. And Eric, so tell me the point when you decided to sell your business and move overseas. What prompted that for you?
Oh, well, I'd felt like I wanted to go serve the poor. And I had in my mind that I would be going to somewhere in Latin America. I spoke Spanish. And I had all these ideas, and long story short, I ended up in Iraq and kind of felt like, you know, I was wanting to dip my toe in the shallow end, and instead I got thrown in the deep end.
Yeah. So what were you doing in Iraq? I didn't even know that part of your story.
We were doing nonprofit work. And okay. So we did clean water projects. We brought in medical teams, dental teams. And also, surprisingly, we were helping a lot of internally displaced peoples, people that Saddam Hussein had really kicked out of these homes and neighborhoods. And after the fall of Saddam, everybody was thinking, wow, we might get our house back.
Yeah. And did people get to move back into their homes, or how did that?
It was a bureaucratic mess. This was 2003, 2004. And so it was an absolute mess. And, and so people, they were living in tents. They were living in bombed out, soccer stadiums, just in hopes that they could get their house back.
Yeah. So how did you transition from humanitarian work to the Philippines? What precipitated that?
Yeah. After that 1 year in Iraq, I thought I was going to go back into business. That was the plan. You know, to climb the corporate ladder or start another business. But I felt like I was at this fork in the road of, I knew I was passionate about business, but I loved helping people. And I felt like I couldn't choose both. Yeah. So I decided to take the next 9 years and help people that were living in terrible situations around the world. So I was working for a Christian nonprofit organization. But yet at the end of my time, I had a lot of teams that I was working with saying, hey, what if we used business instead of kind of this nonprofit vehicle to help people? And they were saying, actually, I think we might even have bigger impact. Well, that was interesting to me, having that business background, to see, wow, could these two passions really come together in the same thing? And around that same time is when my father-in-law, Stephen Freed, was looking at this area of the Philippines that was really at risk of trafficking and wanted to build a business that had the heart of a nonprofit.
That's really awesome. So 20 plus years overseas doing, you know, volunteer, you know, Christian nonprofit work, business with a purpose or business with a mission work. What do you see as the impact difference between the humanitarian piece versus coming in with a business?
Yeah, I have been amazed at the amount of impact that we've been able to have in our company called Dignity Made. And I should probably give a little bit of background of, you know, kind of what we make and kind of how the model works. But on a theoretical level, I think I underestimated how helping the economics of an area while helping with the community development can have this really exponential impact. Yeah. And it was it was surprising some of the things that we didn't expect. Things like when we had really built our facility and had employees and farmers and all those kinds of things, all of a sudden, other businesses started popping up. When we first got to this area, there wasn't a business that had over 5 employees for 30 miles in either direction. And now we are starting to see across the street, a restaurant popped up because the person saw an opportunity to feed people for lunch that were coming from our factory. The guy 3 doors down saw an opportunity to put together a hardware and lumber yard because we kept buying things from an hour and a half away. We saw a gas station pop up, and there wasn't a gas station for an hour and a half away. Wow. So we've seen dozens of businesses that have started. And so you can kind of see this, $1 invested in the community really becomes $5 because it's just circulating around and building up the whole economy. Now, again, just economy building that up on its own doesn't really get the whole community out of extreme poverty, but it becomes this huge economic engine to really fuel the community development.
Yeah. So you started with coconuts, helping coconut farmers. Tell us a little bit about the plight of coconut farmers in the Philippines, how you guys were able to get started in that, making a difference for them.
Yeah. So my father-in-law, Stephen, and his partner, Don, they had been working in the Philippines for many years. This is rural Philippines, seaside villages. To paint the picture, most of these farmers live in a nipa hut, so kind of bamboo walls and thatched roofs, usually a 10 by 10 foot area. And that's where they sleep. That's where they cook. And most of them, they have 1, maybe 2 pairs of clothes. They're often skipping meals because when there's no harvest, they're not eating because they're living hand to mouth. No savings, no safety net. So somebody gets sick and they just hope for the best. They don't have health care. And even if they did have the money to pay for health care, the local hospital is 3 hours away. Wow. You have to get on the back of a motorcycle over bumpy roads. And if it's raining, you have to ford 7 rivers. Wow. And so if you break your leg in that kind of situation, a lot of times you're thinking, hey, I think I'm going to take my chances here.
Yeah.
And so people can get really desperate if, especially when harvest is not going well or when there's hardships. And so most people, they drop out of school by 6th grade because they need to help provide for the family. And kids are usually malnourished. There's delayed cognitive functioning, a lot of birth defects because moms aren't getting the nutrients they need. They're usually eating rice and just a small handful of vegetables. Wow. And so Stephen, my father-in-law, and Don, they were helping. And they built an orphanage, a high school, and they were doing some other really good nonprofit work, helping with clean water. But it wasn't enough. And so they started asking some farmers more questions. What's going on? What are the deeper issues? And there was one farmer that we talked to. And on the way out, after all of our interview questions, we said, hey, what's your biggest hope and dream for your life? And we thought he would talk about building a cinder block home that could withstand the typhoon so his house didn't get knocked over every time there's a typhoon. Or education for his kids, because that's always really important. But he looked at us and he said, my biggest hope in life is that my debt is not passed on to my children. And to live hand to mouth, to have to tell your family, sorry, we can't eat today, that's already shameful enough.
Yeah.
But then to take on this debt that is going to weigh on your family, and then to imagine someday I'm going to have to pass this debt on to my kids and they don't deserve that, it's got to feel so shameful.
Yeah.
And we realized that was this economic problem that needs an economic solution to be part of this. So that was really part of the birthing of Dignity, is to say, okay, let's utilize the assets they have and really leverage that to help this community and help connect them to the global marketplace. Because right now they're selling to these coconut buyers that are basically exploiting them because they don't have any other options. And so by us coming in, we buy the coconuts. We give them a fair price. We help with community development. We help them get out of those predatory loans and corrupt pricing practices. And then we make the coconut products and manufacture them, put them into jars or other things. And then we sell them in the US. And as much as possible, our goal is we want to be a bridge so that we are just the connection between the farmer and the customer.
Yeah.
And we even have all of our workers sign the lids of the jars that are being made that day.
Oh, cool.
So you can see who made your jar and what's their story.
Yeah, that's great. I love that. I know when we lived in Thailand, our coffee used to have these like updates. It was just like a, you know, little chunk of paper that they cut out and put in. And, you know, well, the coffee's like this year because of the weather, or we had a lower harvest, or things are great. And I actually bought that coffee for like, I liked the coffee. It was good. But I kept like hoping I would open it up one day and see another little note from the company. I never did see that. So tell us a little bit. I know you guys have a different coconut oil extraction process. Tell us about that and how you discovered that and all those good things.
Yeah. So none of us had a background in food production, which I think if we had known at the time how daunting it was and how many regulations there were with, you know, the FDA and things like that, I'm not sure if we would have gotten into it. But soon in the process, we were looking at what products can you make with coconuts? And there are mainly six basic products. And then there's hundreds of things where you could use the coconut products in other products. But the main thing we saw was the virgin coconut oil. It's really hot. It's a really great product that's versatile and has so many benefits, both for cooking and baking, but then also for skin and hair.
Yeah.
And so we wanted to make coconut oil, and our plan was just to make coconut oil the same way everybody else does. We didn't really think about being innovative until we started looking at the equipment that we were going to use. And we were about to buy the whole production line with all the equipment. And Don, one of our co-founders, who's kind of, you know, he's kind of an inventor. He said, guys, I can't help but think that there's got to be a better way to make this. So we stopped and looked at other processes and found that the best olive oils use what's called a centrifuge. So instead of pressing the oils out, where oftentimes you get really high heat, it actually nearly boils the oil, and which changes the taste profile and you lose a lot of the micronutrients. We use a centrifuge and tried putting our coconut cream in a centrifuge, and that uses G-force. And at one end comes the milk, out on other end comes the coconut oil. And we tried it, and it was the best thing we'd ever tasted. Everybody that tried it said, this is the best coconut oil out there. And so that became our new process. We were thinking, do we patent this? Or because once we patent it, then it's out in the public for everybody. And I don't think we can defend this. So it's just one of our trade secrets.
Yeah.
So we really have a uniquely better coconut oil because it has four times the antioxidants. It's a truly raw product, has all the micronutrients, but then it also really tastes better. In fact, we just won the International Taste Institute, gave us the Superior Taste 3-star out of 3 taste review.
Cool. That's awesome. Yeah. So you guys, I would imagine in a business like this, the bottleneck is actually on the selling, not on the production. Like you could probably bring on additional farmers, I would imagine, if you had a bigger market, or where is the bottleneck for you?
For years, when we started, the bottleneck was consistent production. Mm. Making virgin coconut oil, it was kind of like an art form. Some batches were really great, and then other batches were like, what happened? And we couldn't figure it out.
Yeah.
And we actually partnered with some guys that were in the food industry, and they really helped us get good, consistent production runs. so that every single time it was just really good quality. But that took a few years.
Yeah.
And then in 2019, we had this super typhoon that really knocked us on our butts.
Yeah.
On the heels of that, we had the pandemic. And I mean, that's a whole nother story of, you know, how we even survived those years of the typhoon and the pandemic. But then, and it really wasn't until 2 years ago that we had more supply than demand. And so for all of those early years, we were just working as hard as we could to keep enough jars on the shelf so we didn't go out of stock.
Yeah.
Because for retailers, these big box stores, we're in a few big chains, and for them, being out of stock is a death wish.
Yeah.
You know, yes, you can be out of stock for 1 week, maybe 2 weeks, but you get into 3 and 4 weeks and you're kicked off the shelf. And so you lost this huge opportunity for sales.
Yeah.
But now, we are in this place where we have more capacity and we can take on more clients. And so we're going back to some of those grocery stores and retailers that we said no to because we didn't have the supply. We're saying, hey, we can do it now.
Yeah.
So we're out there. And we have a broker that's helping us get into stores.
That's great. I think you'd mentioned before when we were talking that you've actually had farmers approach you and say, hey, can we work with you? You know, is that still the case?
Yeah. So right now we have 156 farmer families.
Wow.
We help them get out of those predatory loans, out of corrupt pricing practices. And then we've even hired 114 employees from these farming families.
Yeah.
So we're having a direct impact on about 2,000 people in the area.
Nice.
And so we've helped them. Sorry, I forgot your question.
No worries. Let me just write a note where I need to edit 17. Yes. So I just said I had just asked you, let me ask it again. So when we had talked before, you had mentioned that you have farmers that have actually approached you and said, hey, can we work with you to, you know, I guess working with you is better than being on their own or, you know, some of those things. Is that still the case?
Yeah, we have a lot of farmers that are wanting to join Dignity. In fact, I have a stack of over 100 applicants, farmers that want to join. And at this point, we can't take any more on until we've grown more of our sales. Yeah. But to this point, we have 156 farmer families that we've helped get them out of those predatory loans, help them get out of the corrupt pricing practices that happens with the coconut industry. And then we've hired 114 people from these farming families and given them a job. And so we've had a direct impact on about 2,000 people within these families in an area of about 30,000 in the community.
Yeah, that's really cool to be impacting that many people. Is there like a favorite story of impact that you like or that, you know, kind of is encouraging you as you do all the work of running a business?
Yeah, I think of Ivy Joy. She grew up in a farming family and they struggled. It was hard to make ends meet and they had to get really creative, oftentimes selling secondhand clothing or other things out of their home. And just putting food on the table was hard. And many people in the area, they're often skipping meals, you know, involuntarily. And so they started selling their coconuts to us in 2015 and life started improving for them. And it was so good that she was able to go on into high school and she was able to graduate high school. Unlike most people in this area, she was able to go to college. When we first surveyed the area, less than 1% had any post-high school education, whether college, trade school, or anything else like that, or even just one class. And so for Ivy to go to college was a big deal and a testament to the hard work of their family. So she goes to college, she gets a degree in food technology, and she had opportunities to go work for Pepsi and some other big national corporations. And she decided to come back to her hometown in this rural part of the Philippines and work for Dignity. And today she's our production supervisor.
Oh, wow.
So it's really fun to see her come full circle and be able to stand in front of the farmers and all of the employees and say, hey, you know, I'm one of you.
Yeah. What have been some of the hardest moments in running this, you know, business? I know it's hard enough to run a business in America where it's one language and one currency and you don't have to worry about shipping. What have been some of the challenges that you guys have had to overcome?
One of the hardest challenges was just raising capital. It's, you know, we started in 2012 and we just didn't know, you know, how do we raise capital for this kind of business? Most people have two pockets.
Yeah.
This is my investment pocket. And my goal is to get as much ROI out of this as possible and maybe avoid certain kinds of industries that, you know, I'm against.
Yeah.
And then the other pocket is their charity pocket. And for that, they have a different criteria of evaluating. Is this something I want to give money to? And the idea of those being one pocket was really new back then. Yeah. Very few people were thinking that way. And so that was hard. And originally we had kind of, we started going to like the private equity groups or other kind of more traditional investment. And it just, it wasn't sticking. And and we were raising funds for a more substantial business than what was typically seen in this, you know, BAM space. You know, we needed to raise millions of dollars. And so that was hard to do. I would say the other thing is food production. It was hard. It has a, there's a lot of requirements that on food safety. You know, coming up with HACCP plans. We didn't know what a HACCP plan was. And then we took on organic certification, which was this huge project that took us 2 full years.
Wow.
And, you know, we had to document every single tree. Every tree is marked with a number on it, and we have it marked on a survey map. And that took a ton of work to do and to create buffer zones and all of that. People often ask me, you know, hey, why aren't you fair trade certified? And I said, well, we were so exhausted after organic certification. We just didn't have the energy to be for fair trade or B Corp. Although we're in the final stages with fair trade right now. So we might have it by the time this is released. So, but probably one of the one that was probably the most heart-wrenching was when the 2019, when we had the typhoons and the pandemic. That was a time for us where every month we weren't sure if we had a business. We weren't sure if we were going to make it. And it was really difficult for us.
Yeah, and that's super – the pressure is multiplied when you know that you have thousands, like literally a couple thousand people depending on you for sustenance. So I can't imagine the pressure of that. But, you know, thankfully you've persevered and are here. What do you see, you know, for the next decade? Where do you see Dignity Made going? What's some of your vision for the future?
Well, we've been developing new products. We just changed our name from Dignity Coconuts to Dignity Made because Dignity Coconuts was very fitting for us when we just had virgin coconut oil. But as we are expanding and we've started making a natural lip balm, we've started making some body butters and soaps, all of a sudden Dignity Coconuts just doesn't fit us anymore. And so we are now Dignity Made. And we'd love to expand the business and get into things like mangoes or other food products. Because we did learn the steep learning curve of food products, we'd love to get into other food products that good quality products that are really helping the farmers and the people in the communities. So we'd love to expand and have more products. We'd love to have a bigger marketplace that's on our website. So that's one of the things that's next. We'd also love to expand.
Yeah.
We'd love to get, you know, that stack of over 100 farmers. We'd love to be able to increase our sales to where we can say yes to every farmer who wants to be a part of us. We also have a stack equally as high of people that want to work for Dignity.
Yeah, that's
and cool. It's hard because we have over 100 people, and I can show you a picture of their applications, including with their picture and everything. And they're just saying, I want to work for Dignity. And it's hard to turn people away.
Yeah.
And so we want to find ways to come up with new products, to expand our production. Someday we want to be doing 2 shifts a day. And that'll be exciting because that means more jobs.
Yeah, no, that's really cool. I mean, I love the name of Dignity. I think when I think of Dignity, I just always think of this story when I was 16 and my dad one day said, hey, we're going to go, you know, I've sold this car. For us, it was like a 12-year-old car. It was in nice shape, a Ford Elite 150. They were huge. And we were dropping it off and I was following my dad. And when we dropped it off, my dad goes, yeah, we're exchanging this car for a pool table when we were like getting out of the car. And I'm like, Dad, what? We don't need a pool. And he was kind of like, be quiet, you know. And later he told me on the way home, because they were following us in a pickup truck with a pool table in the back. He just said, like, this is the nicest car this guy has ever owned. And I know we don't need a pool table. In fact, we were about to move. But he said, I wanted to give him the dignity of buying the car with, you know, that he was able to buy it and we didn't just give him this as a gift. And that impacted my life, you know, like we've done charity work and orphanages and those kind of things as well. We still do some of that. But the transformation that happens in someone's life when you give them a job, when you give them the dignity of work, not just that, but like they're providing a great service. They're creating like world-class products, or you're helping them to create that. I love the vision of what you guys are doing. Love the name. Is there anything I should have asked you either about your journey or about the company, or anything else you'd like to share with our listeners?
Well, just having you talk about Dignity, I think the shift that we're trying to make is this idea of, I think decades ago, the idea was us in the West are the giver, and those living in poverty, they're the receiver. And it's that shift to say, no, instead of that kind of relationship, I'm assisting you as you work yourself out of poverty.
Yeah.
And so I'm removing barriers. You know, for these coconut farmers, a lot of people will say to me, so you're teaching someone how to fish, and instead of just giving them a fish, you're teaching them how to fish. And I think that's not quite what's happening. What's happening is basically powerful people control the lake. And so they can't fish on their own. Yeah. They actually know how to fish. And a lot of them have a lot of great skills to offer, but they can't fish on their own. And so we're giving them access to the lake.
Yeah.
And we're saying we're giving them access to the global marketplace. We're giving them access to jobs that they can't get in their area, so that they can work themselves out of poverty.
Yeah, that's really awesome. Really like that, Eric. So tell our listeners, how can they connect with you? How can they, you know, buy Dignity made products and support this while getting a great product at the same time?
Yeah. And going back to your question, you know, what other things to mention? I will say, I know in the beginning I talked about like, what does the typical farmer family look like before Dignity came? I'll say now we have, it's exciting to see farmers building cinder block homes.
Nice.
You know, none of our farmers, they're not missing meals anymore. You know, they're providing for their kids. Kids are graduating high school. We've basically doubled the rate of high school graduation from 35% to 53%. And the rate of kids going to college went from 1% to 17% within our workers, our farmers and employees. And I mean, that's just astronomical. So exciting. And to see in the marketplace, there's more vegetables available. There was a road built by the government because they saw us, you know, planting the flag here in this rural area. And they said, hey, we want to help. And they built this road to help with commerce. And so people have access, they have to transportation. People have bought motorbikes. Some even have bought cars.
Yeah.
And we've taught people how to, you know, get their driver's license. So people actually have their driver's license and government ID. All of our employees have, they have healthcare insurance now, which they've never had before. And because the roads now, the local hospital is only 2 hours away and two clinics have popped up half an hour away. And so, and then of course the biggest thing is these families don't have to be torn apart.
Yeah.
Nobody's no longer do our parents looking at each other saying, well, do you, you know, are you going to be the one to go get a job in that other country so we can make ends meet? Are you going to go or am I going to go or are we going to send our daughter?
Yeah.
And that's where the vulnerability comes, where a lot of people, they're abused, they're raped, they're trafficked.
Yeah.
And that's not happening. Families are sticking together and able to live and work together. So it's exciting to see that kind of change. But back to your question, you can go to dignitymade.com. You can find our raw virgin coconut oil, which is fantastic for cooking, baking. It's great for hair, great for your skin. It's great. Well, you know, I'll say it. It's great as a personal lubricant. My friends keep telling me, like, you got to market that better. And I don't quite know how to do that tastefully. And I've never said it on a podcast before, buddy. So, you know, you might have to edit that out. But
No, we're keeping it.
I can't tell you how many people thank me for that. But then we also have our natural vegan lip balms. We get fantastic reviews on those as well. And then we got some other products and many other in the making.
Cool. Well, thanks so much, Eric. It was great having you on the podcast. I'm hopeful for great things for Dignity Made for decades to come. And God's blessings on you as you steer and lead this company.
Yeah, thank you.
BAM School, facilitating a global self-funding disciple-making movement through business. Thanks for tuning in to the BAM School Podcast. Find show notes, free courses, resources, and more at 4BAM.com.